sir. We promised you a great
Gorgeous
main
event. Gorgeous George. Here
it comes.
Andre, the child.
WrestleMania.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
The Right Hook is a Pantsless Digression production.
Do you like parties?
Yeah.
We can invite all our friends and have soda and pie.
Yeah!
I hope no bad people show up.
Disregard that, Frank. It's a bunch of liberal bullshit.
Been a lot of shit to talk for the rock still. From the streets to Shanghai back to Knoxville. Sitting high on the mountain, I'm holding time, spreading the good news. Been a lot of false prophets and quick hits. And a lot of fun American bullshit. But the time has come to settle and the devil's gonna make a new tune. And just like it's cold wind blowing, can you feel me coming to you? Just like a freight train rolling back tight full of rhythm and blues.
The king of the mighty FTR radio, there is none higher. Sucker MCs call this The Right Hook. Thank you for joining us this week, as you thankfully do each and every Thursday night. I, of course, am your host, the Rated R Republican, the blogging assassin, the social media messiah, blogger without a cause, not only my voice for the voiceless, but the heart and soul of YR's nationwide. Long Island's own John Brodigan, doing it proud, doing it loud, and doing it just because I owe it to the people. Coming up on this week's show, we are still on the road to Smart Girl Summit. We'll be in Old Alexandria, Virginia next weekend for a very special. I mean, this show is cool. This show is big. This show is huge. Next week, first ever live broadcast of The Right Hook with my special co-host, the Dina Fraioli. That's going to be something special, so definitely make sure you tune in next week. I'll be talking more about that later. As for this week, great show lined up. We'll be talking to Congressman Renee Elmers from North Carolina, a.k.a. North Cackalacka, talking to us about the big Obamacare vote and about her speaking engagement at Smart Girl Summit, since we are on the road to Smart Girl Summit. We'll also be talking to Smart Girl Politics founder Terry Kristoff, who, besides planning a convention, has also kind of somehow got conned into having a new podcast with the ED, the Erectile Dysfunction of FTR Radio, Tom LaDuke. So she'll be telling us about that. And, of course, my Boston Peerless leader, TRH Original, founder of the show, the reason I exist, Lynn Crow will be joining us. Friendly Fires Lynn Crow to take us behind the scenes of what it was like winning a Senate primary for Wendy Long here in the great state of New York. And how she plans on defeating Senator Kristen Gilligan, who I refuse to call Gillibrand because whenever I typed it in my BlackBerry, it would spell check it as Gilligan, and there's a reason when they call it smartphones. Anywho, without further ado, our first guest, like I said, from the great state of North Carolina, freshman congresswoman, will be speaking at Smart Girl Summit this weekend, making her debut on the show. Congresswoman Renee Elmers, welcome to The Right Hook.
Happy to be with you. Good to talk to you today.
How's D.C. treating you today?
You know what? It's great. We all just are getting back into town. I've only been here a short while, and we'll be heading to the floor to vote in about a half an hour, and I'm excited to get the week going. We're going to have a very exciting week this week.
Yeah. And actually, speaking about the floor vote, it's funny how fast things have worked, because originally when I read this interview, I mainly wanted to talk about Smart Girl Politics coming up next weekend, because I know you're a speaker there.
Right.
But there was a little matter of a Supreme Court decision and a big vote that I think is happening, if not tonight, tomorrow.
It'll take place on Wednesday, and we are going to be voting in the House for the full repeal again, especially in consideration of the fact that the Supreme Court has upheld it with the taxing authority that Congress has. So we are moving forward on that, and, boy, I want the Senate to vote on this one as well.
What was your take when the original Supreme Court decision came down? Because there's been a lot of different translations behind politically whether it's good or not, and, you know, Is it now completely a tax increase? Is it not a tax increase?
Well, I'll tell you, the funny part about it is all of those things have existed in Obamacare right from the start. Obamacare continues $500 billion taxes to the American people, and the Congressional Budget Office actually projects over $800 billion worth of taxes that largely will fall on our middle-income families. So basically, this has been there all along. I just think that, you know, there again, I was surprised. I thought, you know, and it was, of course, ruled unconstitutional under the Commerce Clause. That's what most of us were looking at. And I was ready to be having the discussion about the reforms that we were going to start working on and putting forward with the American people, working hand-in-hand in a step-by-step process. But instead, we're still here with talking about the repeal. And, of course, what the Supreme Court did, what Justice Roberts did, was he said, listen, this shows you how much power the federal government really has with this taxing authority. That's why it is so important. Elections matter, and it is to the American people to elect those individuals who are going to put good policy forward. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something. And with the taxing authority that Congress has, boy, this was a major overstep and overreach of federal government power.
And I know you're just putting up your freshman term, and you're getting ready to run for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
And when you got elected in 2010, you're with a group of new medical professionals who specifically ran because of the health care law, and Republicans picked up 75 seats because of the health care law. And the two biggest issues in the 2010 election were Obamacare and jobs. As you're running for re-election, do you have a bizarre sense of, like, Groundhog's Day, or is this just
yeah.
the way things go?
Well, I'll tell you, I really didn't – I thought we would be much farther than this. But, you know, a lot of that has to do with the fact that we do not have willing partners in the Senate. As you know, we have passed over 30 bills that are sitting in the Senate that Harry Reid will not bring up for a vote, and they've been all of the issues that the American people have told us in cutting spending, cutting excessive red tape regulations at the federal level, cutting back on all the waste that there is up here, but also repealing Obamacare and moving forward on a good, sound energy policy so that we can be energy independent into the future. And these are the things that are sitting over in the Senate. So the fact that I'm still talking about it is a little bit of a surprise to me, but there again, it to me, it just makes me that much more excited and honored to be here working on this issue because I know these issues so well.
And as you get ready for, I guess, the 2010 campaign part two, I've noticed, like, living in New York, I've noticed over the past couple years that while obviously New York's known for being a particularly conservative state, and while the voters here might not like particularly like the word conservatism, or they have a certain stigma attached to the word, they're becoming a lot more open to conservative policies and conservative principles and some conservative leaders. And I'm wondering, as you get ready to go for re-election, and like I said, we're pretty much running on the same issues as 2010.
Right.
Is it just a matter of having to say them louder, or is it because of the country seeing what works and doesn't work, there are a lot more of middle-of-the-road independent voters that we have available to pick off?
Well, I think you have hit on many of the points that are bringing us to this point right now in time. And basically what we've seen is President Obama being elected in 2008, and then with the 2010 election, it was about regaining back the power of the American people, looking to the Constitution, because in that two-year period since the president took office, basically the Constitution was abused over and over and over again. The American people said, no more of this. We want our freedom back. We want liberty. We need to protect this country. Now, you know, fast forward another year and a half into and close to the 2012 election, and we're still talking about those issues, but now we've seen the results of the president's bad policies. Essentially, 2 years ago, we were still there. Things were up in the middle. You know, gee, was the stimulus really going to help create jobs? Well, we know now that when the stimulus money ran out, the jobs ran out as well. So that's what the American people are seeing. So some of those folks who are more of the moderate in the middle are really starting to say, hey, this is affecting me and my family and my choices and the fact that I'm having choices taken away from me. And that's why we're getting their support.
And as I mentioned before, we've got the SmartCo Politics is having their annual summit next year. mm-hmm. next year. God, next weekend. Next year, too, but we still have to get to the one next weekend. And with, you're one of the speakers. And I think one of the campaign issues the Obama campaign was planning to run on was the quote-unquote war on women, which is obviously something you would disagree with. But I've noticed something. I mean, the left has used this tactic a lot where they basically they'll isolate like a single issue, gear it towards whatever group they're trying to gear it towards and claim that, well, conservatives disagree with us, therefore they hate you. But there seemed to be a lot more pushback this year from, I mean, the Women's Caucus in the House GOP and just, I guess, from people who are more concerned with, you know, finding jobs to be able to put gas in their tank than they are with whatever the new social issue is. Do you think, was it just a matter, has it been like a coordinated effort to push back harder than we usually do? Or is it just a matter of there's more information out there?
Well, you know, there again, a combination of all of it. But the issues that women care about in this country are the issues that we've been fighting for here in the Republican conference. We're talking, you know, you mentioned putting gas in the car. We're talking women who are largely the ones in the household who are coming up with that budget and sticking to that budget and care about what the price of milk is and the fact that people need jobs. And that we need to create jobs in the private sector. These are the issues that American women care about. Healthcare is a perfect example of that. 80% of the healthcare decisions that are made in this country are made by the women in our families because we're taking care of ourselves, we're taking care of our spouses, our children, and our parents, our retired parents who need good healthcare. We care about these issues. So it boils down to so much more than whether or not you can get free contraception. I mean, you know, talk about sending us back years in time. That's the Democrat Party because they're trying to say that those are the only issues the American women care about. We care about everything, and we care about choice. And what the Obama administration has put forward, and many of the Democrats who support these issues, limit choice. I should be able to make my own decisions for my family. I should be able to make health care decisions for my family with doctors and nurses coming together and doing those things, not the federal government coming in and making those choices for me.
And I've noticed since 2008 when Sarah Palin was chosen to be John McCain's running mate, who, besides being polarizing between left and right, for whatever reason, it was polarizing amongst people, with even conservatives within our own party. Mm-hmm. But since then, there seems to be a lot more women who are willing to, A, not being able to afraid to admit that they're conservatives, and even after seeing what she went through, being willing to say, you know something, this is something I have to do, and running for office themselves. I mean, I think we've got like five women running for Senate this year, a lot more Congress people. We elected like 10 or 12 last year. What's the importance about, I mean, specifically women get involved in conservative politics, but also with like the public debate in general?
Well, there again, because women are so connected and involved and understand the issues, you know, we care about these issues. And I think there again, you know, you mentioned some of us that were elected in the 2010 election. That was the largest elected group of women on the Republican side, either in history or close to. So the point being that, you know, we put ourselves out there. I hope that we have kind of helped bolster some other women who have considered this. It is not just a job for men. We bring so much to the table, a different perspective, bringing it home, telling people how these issues affect them on a personal level. That's what we can do. And I think women do that the best. And I hope that there are women out there who, you know, may be considering running for office, even, you know, whether it be at the local level, the state level, or at the federal level, not allowing themselves to be held back because they're just not sure they can do it all, because you can do it all. Of course, you need that family support. And I think that's one of the things that Sarah Palin put forward. She had a great support of family. She stood for what she believed in. And I think that really helped women across this country, regardless of what your political affiliation is, to just say, hey, you know what, we women should be standing up for what we believe in and not just pointing fingers at each other in blame.
And before I let you go, I tend to have somewhat of a younger audience of people who are going to get out of college and they're looking to make their way in the world in general, even make their way in public life. If you could just talk a little, I mean, how you got your start and any advice you have from someone who's considering the jump themselves.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, what a great population that we need to be speaking to, because right now, for so many young people who are getting out of college, you know, 50% are going home to live with mom and dad and are underemployed or unemployed. And that's one of the big issues that we have to be working on, and also why I think we will be so successful in the 2012 election, because these very individuals are the ones that we need to make sure the private sector has jobs for. But you know what? You got to stick to your guns. You got to do what you believe in. You know, there again, I'm a nurse and a mom, 21 years in nursing. I know it well. And I said, you know what? If there are going to be decisions made at the federal level about health care, then I need to be part of that conversation, because I am not going to let my livelihood and what I've dedicated my life to be taken from me. So, you know, you just gotta believe in your heart that you can do it and go with it. And, you know, there will be people who doubt you, but you just have to continue on that path, because when you believe in yourself, you'll be able to accomplish anything.
Well, Congresswoman Renee Elmers, the great state of North Carolina, thanks for joining us today. Enjoy the two-day voting marathon.
Yes.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Great. Good to be with you again. Thank you.
That was Congresswoman Renee Elmers, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Right Hook on the mighty FTR Radio.
The Southern Wind sings again, and not a lullaby.
Baby powder beating to my feet has got me rolling, and the breeze through crackling leaves like a daytime campfire burn. Shift is off the seat, and the wicked is a churn.
This is Andrew Breitbart, and you're listening to FTR Radio.
I love teaming with the best. That's why I'm here at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Our research has changed the way the world treats brain tumors, leukemia, and sickle cell. We help kids all across America. Now these kids have hope.
And a sense of humor.
Where'd you get this color?
It's natural.
Give thanks for the healthy kids in your life, and give to those who are not. Donate now at stjude.org, or shop wherever you see our magnifying glass.
Tired of having feelings? Get rid of those counterproductive emotions of depression, anger, and anxiety. BLI brand medication makes life better. Talk to your doctor today and eliminate all of your problems. BLI brand medication for a better tomorrow.
Feet above the city where I fell in love with you. And the big country skyline brings an urban lullaby that still rings true. When I passed you on the street that day, should have let that red scar fly away. Like any chance I had of keeping you. Like the northern wind a blowing, yeah, my lonely heart was frozen. Never knew I'd find a way to break your tooth. Where the wind blows, babe, you can bet I'll be riding high with it. Holding on for my dear life just like I always.
Welcome back to The Right Hook. Of course, if you can't wait 7 days to hear from us, you can follow us along on the internet. We're on righthookny.com. Facebook.com/TheRightHook, Twitter.com/RightHookNY. I'm on Twitter at Twitter.com/Brodigan, ironically enough. There's also a JohnBrodigan.com on the Facebook. And if you go to the iTunes, you go to the podcast section, all of our past episodes are there and downloadable for free. And I also put the downloadable podcast up on the Right Hook Facebook page also. So you have options. That's what I'm getting at. Our next guest, good friend of the shows, and as I said last week when we had Stacey Amott on, I always get excited when we go to comes to the SmartGo Summit every year, because like a lot of us all got our start like a week after 2008 election, so it's actually kind of it's kind of remarkable as I keep going to the different SmartGo Summit, the different Smart Girl politic events, and you see how far the organization has grown. And also when you look back, same thing with FTR Radio, when you look back and you see how far we've come from, you know, the RFC days. So, yes, everyone involved in both organizations, pat yourself on the back. stepping to the microphone and making her return to FTL Radio, founder of Smart Girl Politics. Terry Christoph, welcome back to The Right Hook, and welcome back to FTR Radio.
Well, thank you. I am delighted to be here.
So exactly how much begging did it take for Tom LaDuke to convince you to do a podcast again?
He did not beg me. I actually approached him with the desire to get going again and telling him I needed some help. So he's been a fabulous nag and pain in my butt for a few weeks now until I finally wore down and said, all right. Okay. So he's been a fabulous help. He really has. I'm glad to do it again. And hopefully he's making me do an hour this time. We did a half hour before, so that's a long time.
Well, did you know what it is? He's got no consideration for anyone else's time. And, you know, the fact that you have a big convention next week, you had a big convention about a week and a half
seriously.
Ago, and you're running a political action committee.
Yeah, seriously. War on women.
Stupid LaDuke.
Waged by Tom LaDuke.
Speaking of war on women, we've got the Smart Girl Summit next weekend, of which you are one of the founding members. What can we expect?
Well, it is our fourth, can you believe it, fourth Smart Girl Summit, and it does take place on July 20th and 21st in Old Town Alexandria, right outside of D.C., kind of a cute little town. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to spend some time there, but it's like a quaint, really old, one of those, American Revolution towns. It's very cute, lots of fun little pubs, so I'm excited about the location. So we do a lot of training, so that's definitely going to be something that we focus on this year because, I don't know if you know, it's an election year, and we really want the women. Yes, there is apparently a few important elections going on. So we want to get women trained on get out the vote. Our friends at Franklin Center are going to do some citizen journalism, citizen watchdog type things. And we're going to hear about from Anita Moncrief about voter integrity and looking out for voter fraud. So all sorts of training involved. And then we want to talk about war on women. We're putting together a panel. We're finalizing all the panelists right now. But to talk about, you know, the real war on women, this whole thing that the Democrats and the left are manufacturing is completely crazy. But the war that is waged against conservative women, you know, that has been going on for a long time. And I don't see it letting up anytime soon. So we want to talk about that. We're going to have some congresswomen joining us, Renee Elmers, Anne-Marie Burkle. I believe you might know her.
I am familiar with Anne-Marie Burkle.
Yeah. So we're still adding right now. We're trying to finalize, and I'd like to release the agenda right this second if I could, but we're still waiting to hear back on people. It's a crazy year. Like, people are so busy that it's been hard to get people to confirm, so we're hoping to have a few more confirmations. But it's kind of our usual. We try to do a nice mix of training and speech, a few panels, and then, you know, booze, open bars, lots and lots of drinking and socializing.
That's the reason I go.
Conservatives aren't boring, right? They're kind of fun.
Yeah. And it's actually, the war on women is like, in some ways I would think makes planning events like this easier for you because the left gives you so much material. But there's a question I've been asking any female guest I've had on the past couple weeks in that, the Democrats using the quote-unquote war on women, it's nothing new. I mean, they've been doing the same tactics for 40 years where they isolate an issue, they isolate a voter, and then tell those voters that if you disagree with – because conservatives disagree with you, that means they hate you. Which, you know, so because, you know, conservatives are pro-life and, you know, abortion is a quote-unquote women's issue, we have a different opinion, therefore we hate all women. And it seems to be not effective to them this year. I don't know if it's because there's more of a pushback on our end. I don't know if it's because there's more information available where people aren't falling for it like they usually do. What's been your take on the failed war on women?
Well, I think it's a lot of those things. They really ramped it up this year because there was this Emily's List survey that they did last year, and they realized that they were losing women. Like, women that had voted for Obama in 2008 were really, really not pleased with him on many issues, mostly the economy. I mean, that's what women care about. and they were losing the women vote. So they have gone full board. And I know they do it all the time. This is their thing. It's all they have is to try and make women feel like they're having rights taken away from them. So it's deliberate, and it's very a concerted effort for all these left-wing groups to try and make them make it seem like conservatives are going to send us back to the Stone Age. That's the one I hear all the time. You want to send women back to the kitchen. I'm like, well, if they're happy there, sure, I don't care. You know, what's the big deal? But I think it's because the economy is so bad. Women are like, you know, screw this. I'm not going to use the C word, so don't get the beeper ready. I'm not, you know, don't bleep me out. I'm not going to use it, I promise.
I'm the rated L Republican. I don't bleep anything.
Okay. Not using it, I'm not. But I have been called it, so there is a war on women. The economy, that's what women care about. And they're like, you know what, maybe contraception is a really important issue, but not for this year. So I think that it's kind of a losing argument, and I think it's backfired big time. But it's only going to get worse. I mean, as we get closer to the election and more polls come out showing that Romney's gaining favor with women or whatever, they're just going to keep hammering it. So, oh well, we'll keep pushing back.
Yeah, and actually, speaking of the C word, and I only bring this up because this actually stemmed from when the joke, the running gag between us stemmed from when you were on the Snark Factor talking about some of the, shall we say, less than pleasant comments you've gotten from people. I know that one of the speakers, and I'm assuming this is confirmed because I saw on your website, the Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. She's been like this viciously attacked by the liberal talk radio host, and you always hear about some of the comments and emails and voice messages you've gotten. I know Tabitha Hale's got a lot of horror stories.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Does it get to a point where you just, I mean, is it, does it stay as offensive as each comment sounds, or does it get to a point where like, this is just the type of people they are and it rolls off your back?
Yeah, it really does. I mean, that's why I don't have a problem saying it. I'm not going to say it because I don't want to set, you know, people to a frenzy, but, you know, you get desensitized to it because, and I don't even get a fraction of what, like, a Dana Loesch, a Michelle Malkin, any of those women get. They just get the worst treatment. And at some point, you're like, that's all you got? I mean, really? That is so unoriginal. They always default to the C word. And, you know, they follow kind of along what Bill Maher does. And, like, okay, you know, but that's, if that's all you got, then it's really, really sad. And it doesn't mean anything anymore. I mean, the first couple times I got it, I was like, wow. And I really didn't get a lot of hate mail until I started working with CPAC and we put out that Bill Maher video. And we really, you know, it got on Fox, it got on ABC, it got on a bunch of different networks. So we got, you know, kind of we're reaching an audience that maybe I don't normally reach through Smart Girl Politics, and it really offended people. And they came out with guns a-blazing. And it's like, but, you know, anonymous little tweets or emails, I mean, that's what it's the funniest part about it. It's always anonymous. And if it's not anonymous, it's always from a liberal male. It's crazy to me the number of hate tweets and emails we get from men, the men of the liberal variety. They are so incredibly threatened by conservative women. They, you know, and you probably know a few liberal men in your life, considering where you live, but
yeah, exactly.
I don't know what's up with it, but they are threatened. And I think, you know, the liberal women don't like us, but liberal men are in fear.
I actually got into an argument with one time because this is when the left was running the talking points where it's different when Bill Maher says it because he's on paid cable, he's not on free TV, he's not on free airways.
Right,
And when
right.
I ask him, so you're saying that if Rush Limbaugh was an HBO, you wouldn't mind that he called Sandra Fluke a slut? At that point, he just didn't have an answer and walked away.
Oh, they never do. They never do. They can't. I know I feel it. I feel that it's wrong. I cannot explain to you why, but I just feel it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, so as long as I have a show on, like, you know, satellite radio, then I can insult women. That makes sense.
Yeah, and these guys, I know a few of them in my life, and they are married to liberal women, and they do what the wives tell them. Oh, my wife is offended, so I'm going to be offended, too. I'm like, very, very open-minded and free thinker you are. What are we going to do? Yeah. We're going to have Smart Girl Summit and go, blah, 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 blah.
And we're actually going to have fun. And like, the main reason I look forward to the Smart Girl Summit is like Smart Girl, FTR, obviously before that. I mean, we all got like our start around the same time, right after the 2008
yep.
election. And, you know,
yep.
when you look back from when you were, and I asked Stacey this question, back from when you guys were just like four girls doing the can-can on the stage at the 9/12 march, and you see what it's grown into. I mean, are you shocked or taken aback by it?
Well, I mean, it's always amazing, like, going to conferences and stuff and the number of people have actually heard of us, because you never know. You're on Twitter and, you know, you have a good following. You talk to a lot of people, but you recognize there's a certain echo chamber there. So when you get out and you know that people know you and have, like, this really positive opinion of what you're doing, it's really cool. So, I mean, I love going to those things and talking to the people in the grassroots, the ones that are actually out there organizing rallies and going door-to-door and all that, that they have heard and that they feel influenced by it. That's incredibly gratifying. And working with CPAC, too, I'm pretty excited about that because Smart Girl Politics is a nonprofit and can't get overtly political. But with CPAC, you know, we can really put money behind these great candidates. So it's kind of exciting what's going on. But in my mind, you know, I know a lot of people think about this year as being the be-all, end-all. But I'm like, we got to start thinking, you know, we can't just think of this election. Yeah, it's important. But we got to be thinking several elections down. You know, it's a long haul. So that's kind of what I would like to also drive home to people, maybe hopefully through Smart Girl Summit, is say, yeah, this year is important, but we got a lot of, you know, election cycles. We get knocked down, we get back up, we keep going.
So next weekend, we all get together in Virginia. We learn, we teach, we listen to speeches, we drink, we go home.
We do karaoke.
We do karaoke. After that, what comes next for Smart Girl Politics? And CPAC.
Well, actually, at the end of July, we're going to be having something in the New Jersey area. I think it's going to be along the lines of school choice. I'm not really sure. So we're kind of working out the details. And we're going to be doing a lot of get-out-the-vote kind of training. We're hoping to get into Ohio sometime maybe in September to go get a contingent of women to go door-to-door and talk about energy issues and why it's important in this election cycle. But in October, we are coming to your neck of the woods, Mr. Rodigan.
I am looking forward to that.
Yeah, we're having a luncheon in conjunction with the presidential debate that's taking place at Hofstra. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, and I think it's October 16th. I can't remember exactly what date it is. And God knows I have no clue where it is, but it's on Long Island somewhere.
Yes, I believe it's at the Westbury Manor.
Do you have any idea where it is?
I believe it's the Nassau County Republican Women's Group, whatever they're called, are involved with it with you guys. It's either at the Millridge Inn or the Westbury Country Club.
Oh God! Now I don't even know. Now I feel silly because I don't know. I was like, you know, it's up there on Long Island, but we're going to be pushing that out soon. We're still trying to get speakers and stuff lined up for that. So that's kind of exciting. But what we really want to do is go into some of these states like Ohio and Virginia and get women to get out to vote. That's the plan.
And before we let you go, when did LaDuke decide he's going to force you to do that podcast?
About a month ago. He's been harassing. He's been threatening. He's been stalking.
It starts this week or?
It does. We recorded it today. It's called Here's the Thing, because I always say, here's the thing when I'm trying to explain a very important point. So that's the name, kind of like NPR-ish, but whatever. You know, I'll be in touch with my crunchy side, right? And it's going to be, I think semi or regularly on at 11 a.m. on Tuesday mornings on FPR Radio. I guess I'm too PC or, I don't know, for nighttime radio on FTR, so I'm going on in the morning. Not cool. I'm not one of the cool kids anymore. If I say the C word, though, that'll get put on in the evening.
That'll actually be an FTR radio bump.
I'll have to think about that. But he is my super producer, Tom LaDuke. Woo!
Don't tell him that. Terry Kristoff, founder of Smart Girl Politics, founder of CPAC, the host of Here's the Thing with Terry, ironically enough, with Terry Kristoff. Thank you for joining us tonight. We will see you next weekend.
Thank you, sir. Looking forward to seeing you next week.
Okay, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
That was Terry Kristoff, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Right Hook on the mighty FTR Radio.
Gonna drift to the gray wide open. Wanna set my spirit free. Won't stop till I reach the ocean. Gonna break the chains holding me. Uncaged. Gonna swim in the coldest river. Gonna drink from
This is Andrew Breitbart, and you're listening to FTR FPR Radio.
When you're drinking your overpriced coffee or a Mocha Choco, whatever, in the Wacko Latte at Starbucks, you ever feel like you're the only conservative in there? That's because you probably are. But don't feel bad, as you can annoy the bejesus out of those pesky Moonbat, New York Times, and Daily Coast reading liberals by reading HoosierAccess.com. At HoosierAccess.com, you can read the latest thought and opinion from conservatives in the crossroads of America. Annoy the Moonbats. Add HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today.
Please stare into the center of the moving shame. I'm so happy to be alive. Everything is going to be fine. Did I take my medication today? Keep working hard to stay alive. Goodbye.
And the river was wide. She flowed from the mountains straight across the great divide. And her heart ran cold, but her love runs deep. She's fire on the mountain, wrecking everyone she meets. She's like rain she rolls in, but that sunshine and her thunder makes the loneliest heart wonder if the ride is worth the pain. Might not be still clouds inside. Oh, but don't you worry, friend. She's coming around the bend. She's holding lightning in both hands.
Welcome back to the Right Hook. A special artist of the week is, of course, the Zac Brown Band, because anyone who knows me knows I'm a huge fan of the entire Southern Ground record label. But the new Zac Brown Band album Uncaged was out today, and literally every song in the album, this band can do no wrong. So I chopped a couple up for you bumps. I hope you enjoy it. And speaking of country music, our third and final guest, who besides being through whom all things are possible, so also a huge country music fan. And if you head over to righthookny.com, she's got a blog post up about taking us behind the scenes of the Wendy Long campaign. Literally from the day that she and Vince Cassell met with her to take her on as a client up until primary night. Our good friend, my boss, my peerless leader, again, through whom all things are possible, making her – actually, I can't even say she made a return to the show because she founded the show with me. So the first year was, you know, her making a return. Anyway, let me get right to her entrance music.
Tell by my attitude that I'm most definitely from
New York.
Hey.
Yeah. Welcome back, Lynn.
Hello, how are you?
Good. How's Troy treating you this morning?
Oh, I'm actually not in Troy, believe it or not. I am in Manhattan. I'm on the Upper East Side.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's all right. Don't be. Don't ever be sorry for trying to put me in Troy and me saying I'm not there.
So, excuse me. One of these days, I'm going to get to an interview without coughing. So. The focus for this month on the show, we're talking to a lot of female conservatives, female Republicans, because you have the Smart Girl Summit coming in a couple weeks. And, of course, you being the smart girl who gave me my start, even though some people might think that wasn't so smart of you, I figured I would have you on the first guest. And just talk a little about your background, how you got started, why you got started.
Sure, sure. Well, first, now that you're, like, labeled one of the sexiest conservatives in new media or whatever that is, I think my job is done. I think I can walk away happy.
It's an honor just to be objectified.
That's awesome. I love that you're number one in, like, this list of, like, 40 people. I mean, Fingers is on there, which is great. But so anyway, first, I got my start, you know, my dad was an elected official when I was a kid, and so I got my first real start in the political game, you know, handing out pins and going door to door with him. I would say that as I you know, went through high school and continued through my life, I tried to figure out what I wanted to do, and I kept coming back to the political stuff and the political game, and you know, worked for George Pataki in 2002 and on his, you know, third term reelect, and it was totally eye-opening for me. And I stayed in New York City, stayed with the governor until early 2007 when we transitioned out, and I decided to leave the political world and kind of go into the private sector. And I did that for 2 years, and it wasn't for me. It was, you know, I mean, I love the private sector, don't get me wrong, but it was, you know, it was architecture, which I opened my eyes to something totally different, and I've fallen in love with architecture too, but I keep coming back to this first love of politics. So decided to start my own firm with a couple friends, and actually ended up working on some statewide races in 2010, among a bunch of other races, and we've kind of caught fire pretty quickly. I believe we've become the number one Republican convention operators in New York. And I also think, you know, with this recent win of the U.S. Senate race, it's been a roller coaster ride, and we really have been able to capitalize on what we know about New York and what we know about Republicans in New York and certainly conservatives in New York. So, as a woman in this business, I'm sure all of my smart girls will tell you the same thing. It's not easy, but it is what we make of it. And I think it's been a pretty awesome ride so far, and I'm looking forward to the remainder of the ride.
What was it like coming up? Because I know it all depends what county you're in New York and who you deal with, but there are a couple where they're not very accepting of anyone's opinion if you're not male and under the age of, we'll say, 55. which really should completely disqualify you from having any involvement in New York politics. But
that's funny, John. It's interesting you say that. Yeah, you're right. I mean, there are certain places, and certainly in New York, where you know, the fact that I have ovaries disqualifies me. But that being said, we have a different take, certainly not just on candidates, but on the political process. We think differently. And I think, and I've worked with two female candidates over the last couple cycles, two totally different female candidates. And I think, this one most recent, which I know we're going to talk about, Wendy Long, female candidates like to work with females. There's no doubt about it. And on the Republican side, it's a lot tougher to find us. There aren't many of us. There are a couple who are fundraisers, who are rock star fundraisers. But there aren't many political consultant females. One who I think about often is Beth Myers, who I've talked about before on the show, who's, you know, was Romney's chief of staff, and she's also basically leading his search for a VP. And I think about her and what she's done in her life and her career, and I mean, she's definitely one of my heroes, and I've been able to work with her in 2010. But there aren't many of us on this side of the aisle. On the Democratic side, there are a lot more women. And I do think at the end of the day, we need to continue to try and bring more women into the process, make them more, not just candidates, but as SGP does, as Smart Girl does, you know, bring more women in as campaign managers, as political directors, as new media directors, because we have a different take. We have a different outlook on everything. We're moms and we work. We're the first one who brings the kid to the doctor. We're the ones who stay up at night worried about college. Not that fathers don't, but it's just a different take. So, I know female candidates really love working with women, certainly, and on the Republican side of things, you know, we're few and far between. And as I've said before, it can certainly be tough on this side of the aisle, but my skin's pretty thick, so I don't really have many issues.
And actually, speaking of having a thick skin, as you mentioned before, you just wrapped up a successful statewide campaign to get Wendy Long as the nominee for U.S. Senate, taking down not one but two members of the Good Old Boys Club. If you could talk a little about, what the experience was getting her elected, and also the importance of, I believe this is the only, I can't think of a more elegant way of saying this right now, but this is the only girl-on-girl U.S. Senate race.
Yeah. Our firm, I obviously work with Vince Cassell, our firm took on this race. I think we were the first that Wendy hired back in February, mid-February. And we basically had a little over 3 weeks to earn her and to get her around the state so she could earn the, 25% of the Republican convention statewide, which is what you need as a registered Republican to get on the ballot. We came out of that convention with nearly 49%, which is unheard of for someone that, frankly, was an unknown. for 3 weeks prior. That being said, I mean, she certainly had some buzz out of CPAC, which is a New York State Conservative Action Political Action Conference, not the D.C. one. Mm-hmm. And going forward from that, it was, you know, we worked really hard. We knew we had one big asset, and that was Wendy. And as silly as that may sound, being able to put Wendy in front of people is our biggest asset. When she's in front of people, they fall in love with her. And they just think she's the greatest. They agree with what she says, and even if they don't agree, they knew she was the best choice out of the three. And so she was our asset. So we knew that we had to, with very little resources, bust our asses to get her across the state and make sure that she was talking to the right people and talking to them and explaining what her vision is for New York, why she got involved, and how she's the only candidate who will present a good contrast, and frankly, the best contrast, against Senator Gillibrand. That's how we saw it. And it's pretty clear that, you know, 50%+ of the voters also saw the same thing. You know, we lost Westchester. We lost Nassau County. We lost Brooklyn. I mean, there are certain areas that we lost. But I got to tell you, not by much. We really didn't spend a lot of time in some of these areas. And Nassau County had certainly has Chairman Mondello, who had a primary. So they were very engaged there, I believe. And I think, but frankly, you know, for us, this is a race. I mean, look, we can go back and say it was unnecessary to have a primary and all these other things. Whatever. For me, you know, that's in the past and I don't care. For me at this point, it's raising money because we need to be competitive against Gillibrand's $9 million war chest. We have to. And we're never going to match her dollar for dollar. We're just not. But we know that the tide is with us. We do. And in a year where, you know, John Roberts handed down what he handed down, and, you know, we've now got the biggest tax increase ever, you know, in the world, in our history, you know, basically being put on Americans, you know, and New Yorkers. For us, this could be a huge year, not just for Mitt Romney, but for Wendy Long. And I think we need to capitalize on it, and we need to be really smart about it. Part of that is utilizing new media. Part of that is utilizing, you know, frankly, we have a really, really amazing state, and we need to get more people engaged and involved. You know, I thought of the show when I was looking at Facebook this week, a girl I went to high school with who she's like a makeup artist, and I think she has her own business, posted about Barack Obama on her Facebook, which is like she typically posts about her kids, and she posted. And it was just this, you know, it was after the Obamacare decision came down. And what she wrote down was, "Thank you for killing small business, Mr. President. I look forward to voting for the first time in my life against you in November." And I thought to myself, those are the people in New York that we need to make sure, you know, we grab and say, hey, don't just vote for Mitt Romney. Vote all the way down ticket. Vote all the way down Republican. And I think those are the people we need to grab. I really do.
Well, but that's actually a good segue, because how do we actually get and grab those people? Because one thing I've noticed, and you and I have banged our head against the desk whenever, you know, we see the Siena poll where, like, you know, forget Democrats or independents, like 70% of Republican voters don't seem engaged in, like, Republican races throughout the state. And it was amusing watch. I don't think I've ever seen this, where I was watching Wendy's feed, Turner's feed, and also the Twitter feeds of all the people working for them. I've never actually seen the candidates that day talking about how bad turnout is. In like a state like New York, how do we take the info and find the people, like your friend from high school has never voted for a Republican before, where it seems to be hard enough trying to get even Republicans engaged in the first place?
It's such a good question. Look, turnout – I've kind of fallen in love with getting out the vote, and it's something that I actually there aren't many things I think I'm really good at, and it's something I think I'm pretty good at, and it's something that I, you know, for me it's like magic. It's like finding that firefly and getting them in a jar, you know, and then you got to find those, you know, like a friend for the firefly. It's like you literally are looking for these very, very small things to hold on to, and like you're building. And for me, it's like I see getting out the vote as the ability to reach into, to be smart about who you target, to reach into a household and make sure if there are four people voting, you've got to get all four of them. There's no reason not to. I mean, growing up in a household with five people, you know, me being one of five, my poor family had to be so annoyed with me. I'm on the phone with, you know, a month out, a week out, the day of, I'm like, who voted today? Everybody vote today? Did we have a problem voting? Like, I'm insane about it. And I, in this past primary cycle, that's exactly what it was for other people. You know, we didn't have $200,000 media buys. You know, we had 100,000 pieces of palm cards of literature. We had 100,000 pieces of mail. But we didn't have, you know what I mean? So getting out the vote doesn't just start 72-hour weekend. It's got to be a plan that you put in place that begins with targeting the right people. And the only way to target the right people is to know how they vote and to know the trends of how of voting, not only in their neighborhood, but in their county, in the state. So it's not just about that R by their name. I mean, I would love to register more Republicans every day if I could, but it's not just about that. It's how they trend. It's the way they vote. You know, there were a lot of Democrats who actually went to the polls on June 26th and wanted to vote. And people are like, you can't vote. Those are the people we need to remember. They want to vote Republican. You know what I mean? There are a lot in the city that vote R. I mean, that's pretty clear. Rudy was elected. Mike Bloomberg was elected as a Republican. So it's about understanding trends. It's about understanding who these people are and how they vote. And, you know, we can go after them and try and change their registrations later. But when it comes to November, because right now it wouldn't matter if they changed. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It really wouldn't. We want them to vote on our line. And at this point, for me, it's we have to, like, dig deep. You know what I mean? You can't. It's not just about running a list of Republicans. It's about understanding that they've got a registered conservative in their household. It's a Democrat with a conservative registered in their household. Trust me, that doesn't just happen. You know, we need to be smart about it, for me anyway. And I think, and Wendy will have that ability to do that. And it doesn't take it doesn't take a ton of money. It just takes some brains and some understanding of voting trends, I think, and an understanding of how New York works.
So, final question. You had to win Tuesday. You've had a couple days for it to sink in. In the immortal words of the West Wing, what's next?
Well, I think I'm going to go to sit by a pool today, which is the first time I've done that in more than I'd like to admit, probably 2 years, probably since 2010. That's probably the same pool. But that being said, I want to get my life on. I want to sleep more than 4 hours a night. And I, right now, I think, we're just taking a look and we're making sure that we're going to, you know, make the best choice for our firm. We've got some great clients. Brian Barr, who's running for assembly, just a rock star. You know, even though he's not a woman.
And anyone listening to the show knows we're big Brian Maher fans.
Yeah. Brian Maher is our client, and we're so lucky to have him. He is a workhorse. He's one of our clients. Obviously, Wendy's a client. But, you know, we've got others. But I think right now, for me, taking a quick breather and you know, trying to make sure that we harness all of this great momentum we've got coming out of Tuesday. You know, we felt it. We knew it was coming down, and we know Wendy's the best candidate, and now all of New York knows, including some of the most important places, like, you know, out on the island, John, where, you know, we kicked you-know-what in Suffolk County, reliably. So, what's next? I guess we'll see. It's a pretty beautiful day, so I'm going to go hit the pool.
Well, I will let you get to that. Lynn Crow, a.k.a. Still the Boss, thank you for joining us on the show today. And we're actually looking forward to reading the double-length Friendly Fire edition on the blog, looking into the details of running the campaign. So we're looking forward to that, too.
Awesome. Thanks, John.
And that's our show. Thank you, Congresswoman Elmers. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, Lynn. Tune in next week. We're going to be live for the first time ever with special co-host Dina Fraioli. Take it away, Zach Brown. Boom, done.
I don't know how much more of this that I can take. I want you, and I ain't gonna have you any other way. No time for talking. Show me what you got. We gonna get this bed rocking. It ain't gonna stop. Ain't no time for talking. Show me what you got. We gonna get this bed rocking.
hurts your body over. I gotta make sure you ain't hiding nothing nowhere. Ain't no time for talking. Show me what you got. We're gonna get this bear rocking. It ain't gonna stop. Ain't no time for talking. Show me what you got. We gonna get this bed rocking. It ain't gonna stop. Roll your body like you do. Don't be afraid to move it. You got everything I like, so but don't you get right to it. Come on, let yourself go crazy. Come on, girl, amaze me. I'm your judge and jury, so you gotta do the time. We're gonna get this band rockin'. It ain't gonna stop.